Welcome to China Talk. It's a series of interviews with leading global experts on China and East Asia, and the series is produced jointly by the Polish-Chinese Business Council and the SWPS University here in Warsaw, Poland. I'm one of the hosts of our webinar series. My name is Marcin Jacobi. I'm head of the Department of Asian Studies here at SWPS University, and my co-host in this series is president of the Polish-Chinese Business Council, Mr. Zbigniew Niesiobenski.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, and we also have our guests.
Hi, Marcin. Hi, Zbigniew.
Hello. So our guest is Ying Lowry. She has already said hello to everyone. So welcome, Ying. We are very, very happy to have you here with us. And I need to say a few words about yourself. Our guest has had a fascinating career, which includes both very, very active career at different various universities between China and the US, and also a very practical career being a senior advisor to various Chinese businesses. So Ying has all the expertise to talk about the theory and practice of Chinese businesses, mostly focusing on entrepreneurship on the internet, free enterprise, and its role in macroeconomy. Professor Ying Lowry has several posts at Tsinghua University. For those who don't know this name, this is the strongest brand in higher education in China, a very well-known university in Beijing. First, maybe we'll say that you graduated from Wuhan University. I think most of us already know the city of Wuhan, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, but it's also a very important city in China with a beautiful, magnificent history. She then graduated from Yale University in economics and did her PhD at Duke University in the US, and has worked at different universities in the US, such as George Washington University, San Diego State University, and has worked also in China, not only in Tsinghua, but also Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, Wuhan University. So very, very interesting career. And we are very, very happy to have you here. The title of our meeting is Chinese Private Entrepreneurship, New Technologies and E-commerce. And this is what we will try to focus on during this hour. Just last note, please remember that all our webinars and also interviews we did with some of the guests before are available at Management Space of SWPS University. You can also find us on YouTube. And of course, everything is available in podcasts as well. So I will pass over to co-host Zbigniew. Zbigniew, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Thank you again, Ying, for being our special guest of our webinar. Ying is the author of Alibaba Way, Unleashing Grassroots Entrepreneurship to Build the World's Most Innovative Internet Company. In this book, together with your team, you describe not only Alibaba as the most advanced example of entrepreneurship and innovation, but also show how many technologies, in this case e-commerce, trigger pro-business behavior in people in various, often unusual places. So let's first talk about the phenomenon of Alibaba and the e-commerce market in China. What is the positive impact of e-commerce on Chinese economy? How many companies and jobs have been created thanks to Alibaba, or more broadly, companies from this segment, e-commerce sector? What is the share of e-commerce segment in Chinese retail sale and in the GDP?
Thank you for inviting me. This is a very exciting interview, and I never have been in Poland yet, but Poland is not new to me, because we heard a lot of story about Poland. And so I hope someday I can visit there to really show my respect for all the Polish people. In terms of this Alibaba and the book itself, it was a very interesting process. I was not asked to write this book. When I went back to China in 2012, I thought I can do some research on small businesses, But it turned out I could not find any data. So I was very upset. And then I went to see my old friend. His name is Wu Jinlian. Probably a lot of people know him. Very, very powerful voice about privatization and the market system, all of those things. So I complained. I just say, I could not do anything here. And then he said, Ying, you have been out of China for too long. You should get to know China better. I recommend a place that is Alibaba because they have done a lot of work to help small businesses. So I was fascinated by this story. And then I called up and I got a phone call. Somebody on the phone. I thought, you know, have been living in America for a long time. I thought it's a fake voice, but it turned out it's not. And it says, yes, we are interested in your research and probably we can start to communicate. So, and since then, I invite them to my event. And at that time, the economic research head, he is fascinated by my idea about small businesses. So this is a very, very good start. And then the more I can, actually, the most important fact was when they wrote something about small is beautiful, and I was shocked. I said, how you guys know this book? And because that was one of my favorite book. So from then, I went to Alibaba and then I decided I want to write this beautiful story about how big companies can help small businesses. So that is a start, you know, why I wrote this book. And during the writing, I learned so much more how this Alibaba hold that as a principle. That is, and I try to let the, it is much easier to do business in the world. That's a slogan Jack Ma had it. So throughout inside, outside, they have done a lot of work to promote small business, to facilitate or enable small businesses. For instance, they have this Taobao Village, and it's fascinating. In 2009, they only find three of them, and right now, the number is close to, it's more than 5,000, you know, about 10 years. And it is fascinating. And also this kind of Taobao village or Taobao town, they have very, very strong spillover effect. And it's just impact just surrounding villages. And then it's from small village and expand into town, and then probably influence the whole county. So this is a very, very important way. That's why I say that it's a miracle in the sense that a big company can grow by unleashing grassroots entrepreneurship.
Ying, sorry, could you maybe explain the Taobao? Because many viewers maybe will not understand the system.
Yeah. Taobao is a kind of, you know, you get online and then nowadays people just use mobile phone and you can do business with that. That's the main part. They have directly toward the consumers. This Taobao, you just have a website, and once you get in, and you can get almost anything you want. More or less like in America, we have Amazon.com. And so over there is Taobao.com. Another one is Tmall. And Tmall is a place for retail selling, and also for individual, you can get on. But for brand name and for bigger name companies, So they could just get there. And in general, people, if you want to buy something more seriously, they would get onto Tmall. And then if you really want to get something, for instance, if I want to have a mouse, I really need to buy it. And then I can get on Taobao.com. And the Taobao Villages is when around 2009, and Alibaba research people and find a very, very special phenomena. Those sellers, online sellers, and appear to be clustered into one region, another region. So at the very first, they find three, those kind of village. And it turned out it does have this cluster. And some of them are from, you know, they have a very strong manufacturing, and others are just from brand new stuff. And for instance, there is one place, it was an impoverished place. And then they just find out, you know, we have to do something. So they just sell some performing clothes and stuff. And so they try to do it. They cannot go that far. And finally, they put on online. And that's it. Since then, this village became a kind of center for performing clothes. And especially during this Children's Day, is the 1st of June. And there's so many, you know, schools and communities come to this place to order. Remember, they do not come to this place, they just order those kind of performing clothes. So it's become a brand new industry, brand new product and production.
Okay, so different little areas, remote places specialize in a given service or given product, even though they sell online, it's a whole village that works in, you know, creating the local brand of something?
Yes, right now, this is a very, very interesting, indeed a long time to explain, but make a story shorter. Originally, those kind of top of villages is on the East Coast and the more developed place. And then we work with those places because we can see this spillover effect. So we intentionally put those, because every year Alibaba would have a Taobao Village Summit, and it would host in county. And in this county, they can spill out all the village and the township. And a lot of county governors are very, very much interested in this kind, you know, to host this kind of event, because that's a big push for e-commerce business over there. So it's a lot of place. Originally, it's an impoverished place, and then later became very, very advanced. So right now, we push it in the middle, and the next one, the wave, will push it to the west. So it seems to be this kind of strategy is working.
You underline in this book these positive rules with Alibaba placing Chinese economy. Firstly, thanks to Taobao villages and Taobao counties, Alibaba directly and indirectly created millions of new jobs. Yes,
that's right. Actually, I participated into those kind of calculation, and actually, it's on the page in this book, on the page 18, I have a graph. So, roughly to say, they have created over 11 million jobs directly. This did not count spillover effect. It means, you know, you relate to Alibaba's, you know, Tmall or Taobao or logistic part. It's not include that. And it's not only include that, but also there's more. that did not count in you, because they're very, very careful about not overstate. But from my feeling, it's great, much, much more than 11 million jobs.
Yeah, you underlined additionally that Alibaba has generated huge deals thanks to extended credit to millions of small and micro online vendors without deposit, collateral, and third-party guarantees, yes?
I know this story very well. I met, nowadays they call them Ant Group, and in the past, it's called Alipay, and as well as AliSmall Lending. And in terms of small lending, it's a fascinating story because they have the big data. They find their clients from the database, or the clients, people want to borrow money. That's basically they are using Alibaba's platform frequently. So when they use anything there, they dropped a mark over there. So you can track what is this person's financial behavior. And therefore, we have data that's directed from this people who make those kind of loans. And as we know, if we want to borrow money from bank or from some financial institutions, and those bank, you know, wear those kind suits and go to some field, and the cost is very, very high. And when they do those due diligence, they take them a long time. And the people waiting for money have to wait for a long time. And also those people who borrow small amount of money, they did not have a good record or good financial record over there. Therefore, it's very hard for them to do the small lending. The cost of each loan, at least 2,000 RMB. That's the very low end. We talk about financial institutions. But how much Alibaba can go through this process? Only 2 renminbi. So 1 out of 1,000. So the cost, why they have so low cost? Because they have technology. Therefore, they can borrow. Also, the time you borrow is not fixed. You can borrow today. Tomorrow you can return. And so this is really good for small businesses. And for instance, if my neighbor want to borrow 1,000 RMB and to buy some chicken or little pig or something, and then become a farming for that. But if you go to the bank, they just say, who you are? We cannot give you anything. You don't have a record here. But if this person could establish some record from Alipay, for instance, and then they can just borrow. And just within minutes, they can get the money. So that is the most beautiful story and in terms of financial part.
So it's very similar to microcredits that are also used in other parts of the world, but it's a credit by the company that actually sells your products. This is the unique expertise of Alibaba. Could you tell us maybe shortly what other forms of support to small businesses Alibaba gives as far as the expertise is concerned? I would just like to remind our viewers that you can post questions in chat. We have already several. There is one question about Alibaba operating with a smaller or lower overhead than Amazon. And the question is whether Alibaba will outperform Amazon in the long run. I think it's a little bit linked to the question that I gave you about the unique way in which Alibaba supports very, very small businesses, like you said, somewhere in the mountains.
It might. Alibaba, in terms of the operational cost, it might be much lower in China than Amazon operate in America. That's two different countries. And the regulation in America is much, much rigorous. And you cannot play too much games and stuff. You cannot ask somebody, you know, like on the door in the morning, 2 o'clock, and deliver something. But in China, you can do that because like labor laws and how much you should minimum wage, those kind of stuff. It's not implemented, or there's no such law up there. And also Alibaba running those kind of things is purely just a platform. I gave you this space and you run by yourself. And of course, later on, this is why I like to do such a research and the Alibaba way, because you run this kind of retail businesses. They should have a lot of regulation. For instance, you cannot sell fake product. You cannot manipulate your reputations, so like all of those. And, you know, I think both in China and in America, they have to learn how to close all the loops. It takes a long time to do that. In China, I think Alibaba can do something. Suppose if I have a seller sell something, if they sell fake, iPhone. And once they just find out that's the case, this person will lock down and they cannot operate on the platform anymore. So this, in my research, that's in my book, I mentioned about that. We call this self-discipline or self-control. It can help the whole nation save a lot of regulatory cost, because Alibaba can play a role as a policeman, right?
Okay, so it's a little bit similar to Facebook also being a regulator of fake news and stuff like this in the US?
Exactly. So you have to, because for the big company like Facebook, like Alibaba or like Amazon, they want to have as little trouble as possible, right? So they have to think about all the ways how to regulate people who perform on the platform. So this is a good way to do it. But of course, you might have some other problem. If I'm a bigger bully, I make some false report or something like that. But I believe at the end, people will learn how to make this system work better.
Okay, so since the establishment of Alibaba in 1999, the number of new e-commerce services and businesses offered by Alibaba has increased. So at one point, Alibaba's structure was called the Seventh World System. What is the structure of Alibaba like today? What sectors does it consist of? You mentioned Tmall, Taobao, Alipay, but this ecosystem of Alibaba is much more broader.
Yeah, I think this is a very good question. Alibaba is a kind of place, they're very innovative. They allowed for outsiders that facilitate them to do innovation. For instance, like a Taobao Village. They can do a lot of different things in their special location or in their special product and so on and so forth. And at the same time, they encourage the employees inside Alibaba to do spin-off. In other words, they just tell you, if you are employee, very important spots there, you are doing something. But you just say, oh, well, I want to take out. I want to go out and to build up my own business. Fine. There's no restriction. And then, you know, gave you some punishment. No. It's encourage you to do that. And also, you can do that internally. They have a very special mechanism. It's called horse racing. And Alibaba has a special amount of a fund. Every year, you can apply for that fund. It's more or less like America. They have American Science Foundation or something like that. And then you can apply this fund, and then you got special fund to do the work you do. And more or less like in Google, every Friday, you know, give you half a day, you do your thing. But Alibaba just say, okay, you do your thing and you can organize the people as long as you're doing real good things. So having said that, until now, they have on the website, they have 14 different subsidiary companies, include Ant Group, and include AliExpress, and include Tmall, and also that's domestically wholesale. It's called 1688. com, 1688. And also they have special platform in East Asia. It's called Lazada.com. So all of those, almost all of those are, you know, just from internal spin-off, those kind of platform or component of or subsidiary or something like that. But also they acquire from outside, like Alama, means they do this fast food and deliver to consumers' house, like those kind of stuff. And because they thought this kind of business could be really good to help for the last 1 kilometers. Or last 100 meters delivery problem. That's work very, very well. And also they acquire more or less like YouTube in America, but in China they have it's called Youku. So you could also they have media stuff. And the most important thing is this is a story at the very beginning. Both Tencent and Alibaba was creating some social media technology and equally pretty good at that time. But Alibaba just, you know, launched that a little bit too late than Tencent. Once Tencent got on the market, my gosh, a whole bunch of people get onto Tencent. That's what we call the WeChat today. It's unbelievable. About hundreds and hundreds of millions of people on that platform. But because they have technology there and they have a group of human beings there to do those kind of work, so they feel so sad they could not take, they did not take off, launch that program earlier. So they think about what they can do. Instead, they force gone small businesses and call it Ding Ding or Ding Talk. So that's just try to promote industrial or business communications. And it's so far so good. They have probably 100 million users. Right now, most of them are domestically, and they provide this web meetings and all of those things. And so they do have a lot of things like that. And the most of the thing that I would like to mention about is they got into a kind of Dharma Institute. Basically, they invite, because they have so much money, so they throw this money onto R&D. So they have invited the best people in the world to do this high tech relate research. And there's, if you are interested, I can send you some information on Alibaba's 10 technology. It's called a black technology. So I think that's very, very good. So not only they stand on today, but also they make people look forward 10 years from now, what they could be doing. I think right now, I have a list of what they do. They have almost focus on privacy sensitive stuff and cloud computing, AI, and also
big data.
Yeah. And quantum theory applications. I think all of those things are very, very useful.
So it's impossible to ask you about Ant Group in connection with its suspended huge stock market debut. So this could be the largest IPO in history. Instead of a big debut, the agencies wrote that this has gone from the deal of the century to the shock of the century, and how Jack Ma fell to the earth. The lending mechanism by Alibaba and the other platforms has been known for years and accepted by Chinese regulators. Additionally, the Chinese watchdogs have known how Ant Group had used digital products, financial products like Huobi, a virtual credit card service, to encourage people to build up debt. So why, in your opinion, have the authorities decided to change the regulation so importantly now, 2 days before Ant Group's IPO? And thanks to this, they suspended this debut.
This, I think I have to go back a little bit about innovation. It's a lot of professors who I really admire, like Professor William Baumol. He mentioned so much about entrepreneurship. I think one of his writing have been well quoted is his 1990 research paper. The title is Entrepreneurship, Productive, Unproductive, and Destructive. In other words, not all the innovation is productive. That could be unproductive as well as it might be destructive. So given that background, to come back to Ant Group, I had a lot of communication with them. And I went visit them, I went talk to them, and also some of those people asked me to write a book about them. And they said, well, you wrote Alibaba model, why not you write Ant model? I said, uh-huh, I'm going to take a look. Because Alibaba model, nobody asked me. And now you ask me, well, I have to take a look whether or not I should write about it. Right now, there's a two side of story. One side of story is China's government or regulatory branch. They might have some problem facing such a big giant, and they are scared about it. This is one side of the story. But other side of story, actually, I mentioned about, I'm very proud of this. that's my English version. This book I wrote in 2016. Actually, in my introduction or the Alibaba Way, in this chapter, I just mentioned about what about Alibaba's future 10 years. So I mentioned about this story, about their financial sectors. So at that time, I talked to them. I just say, okay, Alibaba have been growing so well because they facilitate small businesses, unleash grassroots entrepreneurship. So they really wipe out this retail sector, not in a sense, well, at most, probably they have 10% in the retail sector. I mean, in terms of total, maybe nowadays a little bit more. It's not that big, but they play a very important role in changing people's behavior by using new technology. And I see right now, especially, you know, I was in Wuhan during this most terrible time when this pandemic crisis happens. This in January, I was in Wuhan. Everything shut down, but online sales helped us survive at that time. Without this online sale, I don't know how we're going to survive. I think this is what happens. This pandemic crisis became a kind of catalyst and to push this technology. And then it became a kind of new behavior. And we adopt it nowadays because in America, all of those pandemic situations are very, very serious. So I never really go out. I just call and then they send groceries to our house. Very, very convenient. So I talk to them. I just say, Alibaba can make this kind of change, fundamental change in the retail sector. I believe you guys can do the same thing in the financial sector. So that's why at that time, and if I calculate, I have a number behind that, I say this is a huge market for China. And we have to take on this challenge. And so what I find is probably they use new technology for old idea. For instance, like lending to desperate people that really needed the money. And so that kind of lending is very profitable, however, very risky. I agree just because this side, I agree with the regulator. And also, in the same time, I feel Alibaba or Ant Group had the responsibility to make this financial sector more productive, more efficient, more socially responsible. So that's the only thing I can say. I hope it turned out they could say like Alipay, the payment system clearance process is so good. Once I get back to America, I'm not really get used to it. In China, I just, every time I go out, I just have a phone. I do everything. But here I have to carry my bag. I have to carry my credit card, all of those things. But having said that, I hope I think maybe this kind of analogy is not a good one. When you have little kids, they need to grow, and then you give them space to grow. But if they get out of line, and then just, hey, stop, and think about it. I think in this sense, it might be helpful for them to think what they can do to make a revolutionary change to the financial sector, because the financial sector is a troublemaker, as we know, especially in America. Every time the economic crisis was followed by financial crisis, they did not do a good job, and they need some new idea and new ways to do business. Actually, I have a model. It's called financial differentiation or differentiated finance. What that means is you should have a good way to do a missing market. That's if you are in this field, you know, there is a missing market in the financial sector. that is microfinance. We do need a microfinance, but if they use all the way to do microfinance, it will be the dead end. If they use a new way to do it, it's wide open. It's very, very useful. I hope I can make some contribution in this area in the future.
Okay, so as I understand, in China, there is a lot of maybe a little bit more freedom for enterprises to venture into new areas, less regulation, but then more higher expectations by the government that if you create a system, it needs to be socially responsible or it needs to fulfill the governmental aims. Do you think that such a decision like the one on the IPO would also be a cold shower for Chinese private enterprises that you have to be very careful? And would it negatively influence the spirit of entrepreneurship in China?
I think that's one of the story. There's a lot of story going on in China, which is very sad. There is a saying, is the state aggressing and the private sector is retreating. This is, if you know Chinese, it says 国计民退. That is a very, very bad idea. I think China, even the whole world, they need a very, very vibrant grassroots entrepreneurship. You should allow all the business they have the way to do business. That's in my book. I wrote, small is beautiful and then small is big in a sense that if we allow those millions of people to do new things, at least one would be the good idea that can improve people's economic well-being. So I think that's the fundamental idea. China should adhere this open policy and consistently do this economic reform. If they don't do that, it will be the dead end. I'm very, very positive about that. And right now, there's a lot of private-owned enterprises get in trouble, and the entrepreneurs put into prison. The picture is not beautiful, but I hope people understand that should not be the way. China can do much better if people have a voice there, and if free enterprise or free competition can be a norm over there. Otherwise, it cannot go anywhere.
Let's focus on the entrepreneurship. So maybe one general question. What is the role of SMEs in China? Economic and social development, how important is this part of the Chinese economic ecosystem? I think about the production, I think about the employment, etc.
Let me tell you a story. I have a good friend and met them in a conference. The conference was organized by the central government. It called the Ministry of Industry and Information. It's a very, very important industry to carry out all of those industrial and science information sectors, policies. So I made a keynote speech on how to fostering small businesses. So that guy just present what the company do. Actually, what they did is they try to use the new technology to upgrade small manufacturing. If you go to a lot of small SMEs, just small size, you can see the industry in the 18th century, in the 19th century, or even 17th century. It is very backward, very polluted, and it's really bad. Here you go. You have service sector, company, and try to help those company to upgrade the technology and to incorporate this new internet and digital technology. That is beautiful. The interesting story is that this person, the chairman of this company, is about in his late 40s. He only had, he told me, 7 years and 3 months education in school. In other words, he's very, very smart. What I want to say is, if you like to those people to do, and this guy went through a lot of hardship, you think I had a lot of experience, but this guy is much more. He's from 13, he went out to collect trash and then to get, to do some business over there. And then 16, he was put in jail. And then later on, he started to do businesses. And he did very beautiful. And right now his income is a lot and he has his clients is all over the country. So he's my base for my research. And so that I can get to know what's going on. So in other words, if you look into those places, it's beautiful and people can do things. But the only problem is if there is a local authority, if they, bribery and those kind of stuff, if you do not do the game with those government authorities, you'll be in trouble. So now we have several story, very well-known story passed on in China. It's a terrible story. On the other hand, the state-owned enterprises, I have a dear friend, actually I was involved in the consulting business and I helped them to establish. I used my own money to help them. And then later on, I did not charge them anything. And then I was very happy because my goal is to support one private company. So this is a consulting company. So this company specializes in state-owned enterprise reform. And from the story, they told me, actually it's very helpful. And most of those state-owned enterprises he involved or this company involved is reformed, restructured. And so in other words, not state-owned anymore. The state just have proportion, just the shareholder become shareholder, but it's one of the shareholders. And I was told the people run those state-owned enterprises, well-educated, hardworking, and with tremendous integrity. So that is the kind of story I heard. And this is the hope I can see just from those things. But if something beyond that, especially right now, I'm not happy to see that. I don't know whether I answered the question.
Will be good if we run through a couple of questions we get from our viewers. We don't have a lot of time, so just maybe very, very quick answers.
Okay.
You showed us that there are many difficulties and challenges also in terms of working with local governments or the governmental things. But talking about the rate of success of SMEs, is it easy to succeed in China? Are there many bankruptcies? One question was about bankruptcies in 2020. Another question was about whether we can verify actually if a Chinese company is truly successful. There is an example of Luckin Coffee, a company that was pronounced to be a number one coffee shop brand in China, and then it seemed that the data was not accurate. It was fake. So if you could just tell us quickly, Is there a big failure rate in SMEs, and whether it's easy to scrutinize how successful they are?
I think that you know, cover front SME, a failure of SMEs is high. Basically, that's the nature. If you want to respect for the nature, you know, there's so many trees there, but a real tree grow out is a very, very small amount. So this is a natural. I do not worry about that part. I think people worry about the most is the big environment, whether or not that's good for business, startups and growth. And I think that's the issue. And actually a lot of local government, some of them is really awful. They have all of those briberies and corruptions, but many of them are really good. And the people run those kind of local government are well educated, and they really want to make a contribution. So eager to make some change over there. They really want to help the people. So I think that's, you have to see the both sides. And I do not agree with if you have higher failure rate, that's a bad thing. No, I don't think that's a bad thing. But it depends upon whether or not that's environmentally caused that. I mean, the system caused that. Or because those naturally, they have to get out of business. So that's my answer about that.
So finally, I would like to ask you about Tsinghua University, one of the most prestigious Chinese university. Maybe you can tell us something about the specificity of this university, what makes it different. Which world universities does Tsinghua cooperate with, and which famous alumni have graduated from this university? So, Tsinghua University as a topic.
I think Tsinghua University is a very, very good university in terms of the student body. They are the best of the best. And I had those students, it's just very easy to talk to them. And they're working hard, and they know what they want. Like any other organizations in China, you have to follow the top, and you have to follow the rule from the top. And so Tsinghua University is one of them, very, very closely follow. You know, they have a lot of successful department, but one of those very successful ones, the leader went out, and then he joined Alibaba's Damo Institute, and then they have, and also he run a university called West Lake University. This guy he built up this department, it's a whole school over there, and then he left. If I were you, I would look into some private sector and some county level, provincial level, for cooperation, and they have more freedom. They don't have to strictly follow the central principles or something like that. So university, and there's some university that can do much, much more than Tsinghua University. Excuse me, I should not say that. Basically because that they are far away. Tsinghua University is just just in Beijing, right? So, and the watch. So,
we talked about Beijing. As we are in Poland, in Europe, maybe I'll just spend the last minute to ask you two questions from our audience connected with Europe and with Alibaba, actually. So one question is how the information protection law in Europe would impact Alibaba's presence on the EU market. So it's a completely different legal framework, very strict regulations on data, personal data protection. So how does that influence Alibaba? And the other question is about also Alibaba, whether it will be more open for European exports so that there is a better trade balance between China and the EU. So will Alibaba just concentrate on selling Chinese products in Europe or the other way around?
I hope you guys should do work with Alibaba without compromise of any rules and laws. If you respect a rule and the laws, welcome. If not, go away.
So we should enjoy the European legal framework and feel that it's a good basis for our cooperation with Alibaba.
That's right. It should. And also, it's just more or less like a discipline. If you don't have that kind of discipline, no matter how good you are, we're not doing business with you. I think that's for anybody. It should have that kind. You come to our house, you should follow our house rules, right? So this is the one. And the second question is, Alibaba, they want to do both. They do have the platform for both. For instance, like domestically, they do a wholesale by this 1688.com. That's a domestic. Internationally, they do Alibaba.com. That's for wholesale part. And also, they do have for AliExpress. That's for domestic people to buy from outside. So they do have all of those platform ready. And I hope you guys could take advantage of that. And also, especially like Tmall, if you have brand name, Tmall is a place. You guys can negotiate with them. They charge a high fee because they want to have a guarantee you don't sell fake name stuff or bad product. So they want to have the reputation. But it's worse to cooperate with them. I think it's good for them, but also good for Europe.
So you would advise Polish European companies to work with AliExpress and with Alibaba so as to try and reach customers in China for their products?
Yeah, you could. It's just probably, I don't know whether or not you have worked with them already. They constantly are looking for clients and they like to make a friend in our Chinese way. And also tell them what you want and collaborate and compromise. And also especially show them your best product. And the Chinese nowadays, they are willing to pay high price to buy foreign product. Say, I don't know about, what is the real brand name in Poland, right? If you say you have a watch, it's Polish, it's very good, and everybody will jump into it. So there is a huge market. This is 1.4 billion people there. And that is why this trade war, once you get into China, China can have that kind of resilience. That's the basic reason. A huge market. And there is a huge middle class. I would not say that call them middle class. Probably they're beneficiaries of, past 30 years. And they're really, really rich. So I think about it, you guys only have 38 million people, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, one person to do something. If you can sell 1/10 of people in China, you guys will be very rich.
Okay, this is true spirit of entrepreneurship. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And my best regard for you and your people there, and I really enjoyed for this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ying. It was a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ying. And I also to thank everyone who attend and follow our event. And thank you, and see you again in the next episode of our China Talk series. Thank you very much.
Okay, sure. My pleasure.